Look.
Well, thank you all for participating in Sunday feast program. It is kind of a lot of people. A lot of people online. It's good. Thank you. Trying times, but Krishna is always a respite or shelter. So we should not fail to take advantage of getting that shelter as we go through these difficult times. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Namaste Vasudevaya. So this evening, I want to explain to you the sort of existential crisis that I went through recently when I got an invitation to speak virtually at a Krishna conscious event. Invitation to speak virtually at a Krishna conscious event. So I was a little confused by that invitation, and as I said, it was an existential crisis because from what I understand, and I have it here, the meaning of virtual is something that doesn't physically exist but is made to appear so through computer software. So I thought, well, if I'm supposed to speak virtually, does that mean that I have to make an avatar or something like that and have that avatar speak on my behalf? That's speaking virtually. Or what would be the subject matter? I mean, it's a Krishna conscious event, but what would be the subject matter? Because if it's virtually and that's something that doesn't exist, then how is that Krishna conscious? So there are two questions. Who am I? And what am I supposed to speak on? Couldn't quite understand. So I thought that what I should do is go back and try to understand what virtual reality, what it means, where it comes from, with this word virtual. So I did a little research on this, and I found something very interesting. I found that the word virtue, meaning good quality, character, virtue, goodness, the word virtue and virtual, both come from the same root word meaning. Yes, they come from the, I mean, I have it here, it's so amazing. They come from the Latin word vir, which means man. So, meaning man. But of course, as is natural, over the course of time, words' meanings change. And so there's a history here, what happens to this word that ends up at virtual. So it starts with a man, vir, and then it goes to the Romans, and they took this word to mean the excellent qualities of men, including physical strength, valor, conduct, moral rectitude. These things were part of this understanding of vir, or man. Comment? Okay, yeah, Don Veer, things like that, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Madhavamati is saying in Sanskrit, the same idea is there by this Veer. But that's not all. Time rolled on, maybe Sanskrit stayed the same, but certainly this word didn't. Because next, tracing this word, we find in the 14th century, this idea that the word means man, and all these qualities like hero and warrior and those kind of things had been replaced with the word virtue describing any quality that was thought to be excellent in people. And then later in Latin, it became even more vague by understanding that it meant the effect with respect to inherent virtues and capabilities. In other words, they didn't have to be real. They just had to be inherent or intrinsic, because we're starting to get a little fuzzy here about what it actually is, till we get to today's definition, which is that the word describes something that doesn't actually exist at all, but is made to exist through software. And so virtue and virtuel, they have this common history in developing. So at least that gave me some idea of what I could speak on at that Krishna conscious event. And what I chose to speak on was indeed virtues in Krishna consciousness. We all know Chaitanya Charitamrita comes here from time to time. He always gives his lectures, a little play on words, right? Yes. So I have one today for you also. And that is the question, does the question is there virtue in virtual meetings? And I hope that there is, because that's the subject, virtue, this evening. What is virtue, and why is it important to us? Well, there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that I'll recite and read a short purport, Prabhupada's purport, so we can get some idea about what are virtues and why they are important. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 7, text number 41. Sarve vedasya yagyascha tapo danani channaga jiva baya pradal nasya na kurviram kala api. O spotless one, your answers to all these questions will grant immunity from all material miseries. Such charity is greater than all Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, etc. Purport. The highest perfectional work of charity is to give people in general immunity from the anxieties of material existence. This can be done only by performing activities in devotional service to the Lord. Such knowledge is incomparable. Cultivation of the knowledge in the Vedas, performance of sacrifice, and distribution of munificent charities altogether cannot form even a part of the immunity from the pangs of material existence that is gained from devotional service. The charity of Maitreya not only will help Vidura, but due to its universal nature, will deliver all other matter, all others, in all times. Thus Maitreya is immortal. So this is from a conversation between Maitreya and Vidura, found in the 3rd canto. And it mentions several things which we ordinarily take to be virtuous or excellent activities in man. Charity, sacrifices, penances. These kind of things are the practice of those who are virtuous, who care about others in the society in which they live. But the verse makes a very, very important distinction. It distinguishes material virtue from spiritual virtue. Material virtue, we can find so many people that are good people in the world, that do charitable acts, that self-sacrifice for others, who are good, have good qualities like being calm, even-mindedness. We find this. Yet the transcendental sage Maitreya finds a difference between that type of virtuous activity and the virtuous activity of a devotee of the Lord. Now, the activity may not be that different. As it's explained here in the verse, it says that In the purport, cultivation of knowledge in the Vedas, the forms of sacrifice and distribution of munificent charities, all together cannot form even a part of the immunity from the pangs of material existence that is gained in devotional service. So if we do virtuous activities in devotional service, then that gives the real goal of being virtuous. And there's a goal to being virtuous. It's not just be nice people, whether you're spiritualist or on the transcendental path. It's not just to be a nice person. The idea of virtue and practice of virtue is to gain immunity from all material miseries. That's why we do that. That's why we do it. To gain relief from the miseries of all material existence. And so when in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, we find someone addressed as, O virtuous one, it means they're very special because, one, they're free from all the pangs of material existence, and two, they're doing it in devotional service that are pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in that way, they gain liberation from this material world. They gain liberation from this material world. So, virtues and practicing virtues is very, very important. Now, I want to share with you a list of the different meanings that Srila Prabhupada has given to the Sanskrit term anaga. 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 That's the Sanskrit word that means virtue. But it's defined in different ways. And so in order to get a 360-degree look at the meaning of anaga, or virtue, we're going to take a look at how it's defined in the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. These are some of the definitions. As I mentioned already, O virtuous one. So there's a direct translation, anaga to virtuous. Without any sins. Without any sins. One who's without any sins means their prabdha karma is gone, there's no more karma, and they're free. Jivan mukta suchite, even within this material body, they're free. They're sinless. So no, they don't have to experience the pangs. Without any contamination. Contamination of what? Contamination of the three modes of material nature. O spotless one. Again, the same idea. Spotless, just like the Bhagavatam is described in the 12th canto. Amala Purana, the spotless Purana. It doesn't cause any rebirth in this material world. Amala Purana, spotless, virtuous Purana in that regard. O pure one, one who is free from sinful activities. O Supreme Pure, Sinless Maharaj Pariksit, O Personality of Transcendental Goodness. These are all different ways that this idea of virtue is being expressed. Now, there's an interesting section from Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, because he points out 12 virtues, and he very interestingly makes the point that these help one with moral behavior as well as spiritual behavior. And that's kind of what we do also, isn't it? I mean, we get, at the time of initiation, four regulative principles and chant Hare Krishna. Not just chant Hare Krishna, not just four regulative, but both. And both of them, particularly the regulative principles, help us navigate this material world. As do all virtuous things, all virtuous things. They help the devotee navigate this material world so that there's not a mishap on the road, and one ends up back in this material world. So they guide us and give protection to the spiritual practice of chanting the holy name of the Lord. And so Baldev Vijaybhusan points out, and of course, this is nothing strange or esoteric or wildly new, because these are qualities we also hear in the Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere when virtuous behavior is described. So here's the qualities he points out. And again, these are helpful in the cause of moral endeavors as well as the whole spiritual enterprise, meaning devotional service of the Lord. So fortitude, shama, means tolerance, forbearance, fortitude, one of those necessary for devotional service. Truthfulness, satya, control over the senses, indriya samyama. Purity, socha, non-violence, ahimsa. We're going to speak a little bit more in detail about ahimsa. That's one of the ones he lists here, non-violence. Actually, there's a very nice presentation by Shivaram Swami. As we're in the virtual age, everyone's doing a virtual preaching. He has a little video where he talks about the problem which led to the pandemic, killing animals and eating. Ahimsa is a spiritual principle that's universally accepted in all across all disciplines. Yet we wonder when so many billions of animals every year are slaughtered for food. And we wonder, you know, why there's trouble in the world. The Buddha, he came because to save the poor animals. He admitted to save the poor animals. And they were just animals in sacrifice. How many could there have been compared to the slaughterhouses that are going on today? How many could there have been? In the incarnation of God, Buddha came for that purpose. Just think, just see the bad shape we're in right now where so many animals are killed mercilessly. So ahimsa, that quality is a virtue. Service to the preceptor. Visiting holy places. Compassion. Absence of crookedness or straightforwardness in the ordinary dealings, Prabhupada says. Freedom from greed. Respect for the demigods and brahmanas, and freedom from jealousy. So these are virtues that Baldev Vijaybhusan points out in his commentary, Gita Bhushana Bhashya. His commentary in Bhagavad Gita about virtues, things that help us to get free from the entanglement, the pangs of this material world. So, what I'd like to do at this point is present to you a couple of stories from Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, which illustrate the point of why following these virtues is important. Why following this is important. This is the purpose of the Lord's activities. He comes and he performs activities, so he displays his qualities. And he likes it when he sees these qualities in his devotees. And if he doesn't see them, if they're not existing, if people do act otherwise, then there are certain lessons to be learned as well. And so there's a couple of things I want to share with you in that regard. Maybe first I should mention our own list of Gita values or virtues. I know I've probably mentioned it before, I mentioned it a lot of times, but it was probably one of the most satisfying exercises that I've engaged in Krishna consciousness, and that was working with a committee of devotees and coming up with what we would consider and what we can present to the society around us as Gita values or virtues coming from our text, Bhagavad Gita. And one of them is ahimsa, or nonviolence. So I want to speak about that a bit. But maybe you don't know, we're getting news about how ISKCON around the world is reacting to the pandemic. The figure is a couple of weeks old, but you know there's like 40 million plates of prasadam distributed by ISKCON in India during this pandemic? That was a couple of weeks ago. 40 million! I mean, anybody that undertakes an endeavor to distribute that much prasadam is serious about what they're doing and is recognized for what they're doing by Guru and Krishna. So, six Gita values or virtues that we identified, of course there are many more than that, Bhagavad Gita Bhushan named 12, we're just naming six here, but these are things we can think about and try to engage in our ordinary daily activity. First, Samadarshana, equal vision. Now, I'm needing that right now, equal vision, treating all people equally. Choice or desire. The living entity is free, it has its own free will. Choice is there. And how to use that choice is the lesson of virtue. Ahimsa, nonviolence, which we'll talk about. Acharya, teaching by example. We'll also talk about that a little bit. Humility, which is always good, take the humble position. And priti, affection. These six virtues, we can practice them. They come from our teachings in the Bhagavad Gita. We can practice that, then our lives will be blessed. Those around us will be blessed. And what did that third canto verse say we get? Anybody remember? Immunity from the pangs of material existence. That's what we'll get by practicing these things. So, an example of someone who didn't practice these things and the result. It has to do with Drona and Draupadi. You probably know this, no? No esoteric new things. Drona and Draupadi. We know from the Mahabharata, Drona was the martial guru of the Pandavas, the whole Kuru dynasty race. And Draupadi was one of the kings of the day. Well, it just so happened that Drona and Draupadi were like classmates in the Gurukula. And a Gurukula that's characterized by everyone being treated equally. They were practically living this virtue of Samadarshana, seeing everyone equally. So the boys were there, and they had a good relationship. And so at one point, Draupadi said, "Look, Drona, I'm going to be a king one day, and if you ever need anything, just come to me. I'll take care of you." So Drona greatly appreciated that. He didn't come from a royal line. Indeed, he was rather humble in his life, position, and salary, and whatnot, or lack of that. So it just so happened that later Draupadi did become a king, had all the royal opulence, and Drona was in need, so he went to his friend based on the conversation they had as equals in the Gurukula. So he went to Draupadi to request him, "Please, you made a promise when we were in school together. I'm in need, I'm not trying to be greedy, but I need some help, can you help me?" So what was the response? What was the response? And what did it lead to? That's a matter of virtue. That's a matter of virtue. Ahimsa also means not to be cruel in one's speech. And probably that's more important than physically. What's more harmful? Physical abuse or verbal abuse? So Draupadi, when asked by Drona,
mental, yes, emotional. Some words. Our words have so much power, we don't know sometimes.
So Jopad, surrounded by all his ministers and brahmanas, was feeling quite secure. He was looking around in a very proud way. My position compared to him, poor brahmana. And so he spoke these words which went to the heart of Drona. What are you speaking? How can a poor brahman and me, the king, be equals, be friends? This is not possible. Get out. I'll not give you anything. So he treated him like that. Those words went into his heart. He said to him, how can we be equal? I'm a king, you're a poor brahmana. Well, that poor brahmana got some disciples. They, you know, trained them up, and then for their graduation, they told them, go take half of Jopad's kingdom back to me. So they went, and they captured Jopad, and this is the Pandavas and the Kauravas. His students, they captured the kingdom of Jopad. And then Drona came and he said, I'm taking half of your kingdom. So now we're equals. You have half, I have half. But of course we know that that also bitterly hurt Jopad. And so the cycle began from harsh words. The cycle began of hurting and being hurt, hurting and being hurt. Jopad, upon receiving this kind of insult, vowed that he'd have a son that would kill Drona. And cursing and counter-cursing went on like this. So this is the result of harsh words. Harsh words. The virtue is ahimsa, to restrain yourself. Practice nonviolence, to restrain yourself from expressing harsh words. But Jopad didn't learn that, and as a result, one of the major factors of the Kurukshetra War, where millions of people died. And it's not just like they got a thing between themselves. Millions of people died in the war because of these kind of curses. What else? Give me an example of another use of words, which was the cause, the fuse that lit the bomb for this war. Is anybody concerned? Well, Draupadi said there was, well, let's go back to what they said to Draupadi, what they said of their words in the assembly when they dragged Draupadi. They gave so many harsh words to the Pandavas. Pandavas were restraining themselves with the cord, I love this line. They were restraining themselves with the cords of virtue. Amala Bhakta Swami says that in his narration. The Mahabharata, he describes that scene. And the reason why the Pandavas didn't kill the Kauravas right there, because they were restrained by the cord of virtue. So virtue is meant to control us so we don't get in situations like this. And when they spoke so badly about Draupadi, that was the end. It would never be forgiven. So harsh words, ahimsa, is administered by practicing this type of practicing this type of virtuous behavior, we can avoid so many troubles. Same thing happened in the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, I think it's fourth canto, description of Daksha Yagya, fourth canto. Daksha was proud. When Shiva didn't recognize him or honor him when he entered the assembly, he thought that Shiva was disrespecting him. Actually, he was just meditating on Sankarshan, the Supreme Lord. But the pride in Daksha made him start cursing and speaking very badly about Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva actually exhibited a quality that's quite rare, at least at the first yagya where this happened, is he got up, he didn't try to retaliate or anything, he got up and he walked out. He was practicing virtue. He didn't try to retaliate immediately the harsh words of Daksha. He got up and left. Of course, Daksha had another yagya, didn't invite Lord Shiva, his own daughter, he disrespected her, didn't invite her, then disrespected her, then criticized her husband. Oh, hell broke loose, you know the history that's there. He ultimately had his head chopped off and replaced by that of a goat. So all these things happen because people don't follow this virtue of ahimsa, especially in terms of cruel words, not speaking cruel words. So, I also said that I would talk about acharya, or teaching by example. This is so important. This is so important for devotees of the Lord. We are acharya. I'm not saying, you know, what everyone wants to assume we're acharya. No. I'm saying we are acharya. We are responsible for our behavior because people look to us for example. Our children look to us for example. Younger devotees in the community look to us for example. Even our parents sometimes, they look to us for example. So we all have to take this virtue seriously, acharya, acting as an example. It's so very important in the life of the devotee. Let me just read what our committee came up with, see if you can agree with me. The word acharya means one who leads and teaches by example. The acharya by behavior shows what can be done, how he can live a full life with minimum possessions, how a dedicated life of service gladdens the heart, and how a spiritual life is a practical life. The acharyas inspire integrity and good character in others by the standards they set. Teaching by example is the essence of education. Leading by example is the essence of government. Exemplifying one's principles is the basis of dignity, respect, and trust. So, acharya. What's an example of acharya? Well, you know, I learned something. Every time I study for a class, I learn something. I feel fortunate to have that experience. But I learned something about an example that I had known for many years. What I learned was the sadhu, or the saintly person in this example, was Mahatma Gandhi, not just some random sadhu. Apparently, there was a mother who was concerned about her son because her son ate too many sweets. How many times have we heard that one from our parents? You eat too many sweets. So she was concerned. His teeth were rotting. His health wasn't good. So she was, as a mother, concerned. You're eating too many sweets. And so many times she told him, stop, in so many ways. But the boy just wouldn't do it. So the mother decided to take him to this boy's hero, who was Mahatma Gandhi. And have Mahatma Gandhi asked the boy to stop eating sweets because, you know, he idolized the man. He thought this would, you know, if anything, would get him to get to him if he can hear what we're saying. So she took her son to Mahatma Gandhi and said, "My dear Mahatmaji, my son eats too many sweets. Please tell him to stop. Please tell him to stop eating sweets." So Mahatma Gandhi looked at the boy, called him over to him, looked at him, and then said to the mother, "Come back in 2 weeks." "What? Come back in 2 weeks? Can't you do something now?" "Come back in 2 weeks." "Oh, all right, I'll do that." So in 2 weeks she came back. Boy and mother came before Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi called the boy forward and told him, "Don't eat sweets." Then he fell silent. "What? That's all? Why did you ask me to come back after 2 weeks if that's all you were going to say to him?" And Mahatma Gandhi, he was acting as acharya, so what did he say? "Well, I was eating sweets, so I couldn't tell him to stop eating sweets. Because I have to teach by example. If I'm doing, how can I tell him not to do?" So acharya. Even on a small principle like that, how we teach by example is very, very important. And so virtues are meant to be practiced by devotees of the Lord, not just for the material well-being of oneself and society. That may be effective, may not be effective. But as devotional service, we render these things, as Maitreya explained to Vidura. And it's interesting in that purport, it says that these, Maitreya is, really, the charity of Maitreya, the devotional charity, not just the ordinary charity, because he's already distinguished between devotional charity being much, much greater than ordinary, materially motivated charity. So the charity of Maitreya not only will help Vidura, but due to its universal nature, will deliver all others in all times. That means us, too. All others in all times. Thus, Maitreya is immortal. So these are some thoughts that came to me to speak on virtue, because it was clear that to speak virtually made no sense. Indeed, just speaking virtually through an avatar or whatever people use to communicate is just like adding another layer of covering of material existence on us. We are the pure spirit soul, and we're covered by false ego first. Then we're covered by a subtle body, then a gross body. Now a virtual body is covering us. Where does it end? It ends by practicing Krishna consciousness and understanding the real meaning of virtue and understanding how virtue got transmitted over the course of time into meaning this virtual reality, which is completely self-deluding. So, comments, questions, reflections, anyone has? And these things, I don't know if Pandavan is gone. I don't know if there's anybody online. Yes?
I was just thinking of another example about words have such a heavy effect, sometimes more than physical things. When Draupadi laughed, when Duryodhan tripped him from the Indraprastha house, all he did was laugh. And that sparked the whole
world. Right, right. And Krishna did something very interesting at that time, too. He didn't stop. He didn't tell the ladies to not laugh, because he knew how deep that would go, how deep that would go in the heart, and therefore the war was inevitable. It wasn't going to stop otherwise. So yeah, thank you so much. Yes?
I was
in one sense, we understand Vani is more important. And yet, the aspect, we also hear that one should sit next to the teacher, you know. By sitting next, like the word Upanishad, it means to sit close to the teacher, to sit next, you know. So I was just wondering that you're talking about virtual, in one sense, the Vani is virtual. We're not physically present. We hear from the spiritual master, may not be physically present. And yet the importance of sitting close. Maybe you can comment on that?
The instructions of highly advanced devotees are not subject to material contamination. And so they can actually pierce through all layers of coverings that we find in this material world. As I mentioned, false ego is cut through, subtle body is cut through, gross material body is cut through, any layers we add on are cut through by the transcendental sound vibration of the pure devotees of the Lord. So that instruction is not obstructed by anything material. So we can take that instruction anytime, any place. It's immortal instruction, as the purport said. We have examples in Srimad Bhagavatam of Gajendra, who was an elephant. And when he was in difficulty, struggling so much, somewhere from deep within him, he remembered a mantra that he had learned in his previous life. So even death, not only these coverings, but even death, separation from one body, taking another body. The instructions of the pure devotees and the instructions of the Shastra transcend all those things and cut through all those things. They're not obstructed by those things. So to get that knowledge, we have to submit ourselves to the Guru. Tadvini panipatena paripashtena sevya upadakshanti te ganam ganinas tadvadarshina. We go to the tadvadarshis and we render some service. We open their affectionate hearts and please them. And from their hearts pour out into our hearts the transcendental message that's timeless. So as Prabhupada gave the example, just like a man and woman, the man has to be potent, the woman has to be fertile, then conception takes place. So the speaker has to be qualified, and the recipient has to be submissive to hear. But if there's affection in that relationship, the instruction flows more fully and more strongly, depending on the affection. So, sitting close, Prabhupada said, sitting close like the fly sitting on the asana, does that mean he's intimate with me? No. The fly is not intimate. But by service you make yourself intimate, then there's no obstruction to the flow. I don't know if that answers your question, but
I have a question.
Yes.
I recently heard a lecture of, in our Sannyas candidate lecture, we have a chat room discussion. So they said that when we acquire knowledge and we transmit to somebody else, it has not much effect. But when the acquired knowledge we apply in our life and it becomes realized, then it starts affecting. And when we keep on going, and then actually by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the revelation takes place, that definitely has an immediate effect. So that's a theoretical, Madan Nanda was mentioning here in the chat room, that when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's word to Srila Prabhupada that the first meeting had such a potent effect.
Mm. Yeah, well, the effect was potent. They were ready. They were ready. And there's never, the words of a pure devotee, instructions of Shastra, never go in vain. They never are useless or ineffective. But the degree to which they become effective depends on the affectionate relationship, the qualifications of the speaker, the qualifications of the hearer, and the affection between them. Then they become most potent. And so, we should always hear, even we're distracted, we should always hear, strive to hear and understand, try to serve, be affectionate, try to make the instruction more meaningful in our life. That's our endeavor as a student of a guru.
Is that you trying to apply? I mean, I don't mean to be offensive or mean. Just trying to understand that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also gave the order to other disciples also. But it seems like did not exhibit what Prabhupada exhibited, what he wanted it manifested. So possible that they, or I'm trying to understand.
No favoritism. As you say, the order was given to all. All the instructions are given to all. Every instruction that Prabhupada said is given to all of us. And so, who's going to take it? That's up to us. Not that there's favorites, I pay this person's my favorite, and therefore I choose them. And, you know, order is for everyone. Those who take it, that's their benefit.
But then Prabhupada summarized what I understand. He says, Krishna Shakti Bina Nahe Tar Pravartan. Without empowerment by Krishna, it is not possible to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So I'm just trying to put the link, like how, I mean, Bhakti, as you are saying, Prabhupada instruction also for all of us. So not all of us taking it, not getting empowered, or how, where is the missing link?
Yeah, we're not taking it. It's there. We're so full.
Yeah, that was very nice.
So anything else? 6 o'clock. Okay. Hare Krishna.